Okay, Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Nedarim is daf Hey. So we're in the middle of sort of a long and sort of complicated discussion about how it is that we're supposed to understand our Mishnah in light of what Shmuel says about the Mishnah. So let me just remind you, we don't have that much text today to finish. So let's try to just make sure that we get the whole thing absolutely clear. Okay, so remember, we've got this strange thing in our Mishnah. The Lashon of the Mishnah, just to go over it with you, if you want to look at your Mishnah again, let's make sure that we understand it. We'll go over the Mishnah. Ko kinuyin nedarim kinedarim, v'charamim kecharamim, v'shvuot kishvuot, v'nezirot kinezirot. Okay, first thing we did in Masechta is we explained why we're interested in talking about all four places in the world where we've got those issues. And we don't do that every time we bring it up. So we explain that by saying that Nezirut and Shvuot were listed together. And because of that, once we already start mentioning, mention all of them. Excellent. Next. Ha'omer l'chaver mudrani mimcha, mufreshani mimcha, muruchakani mimcha. Now these sound like three cases, followed by another two cases. She'ani ocher lecha, she'ani to'im lecha, asur. As if they're a list of five cases. And then we have another language similar to the Mudrani, Mufreshani, Meruchakani, and that is Menudani Lecha, and over there, apparently, it was still a suffix. So what was this illustrating, these last five cases? So it's clear that what it's illustrating has nothing to do with Kinuyin, even though we opened up the mission with Kol Kinuyin Adarim Kinadarim. It has to do with the fact that it's language that never mentions the word usur, right? That's for sure, that it's got to be based on the concept of a yad, meaning that I can extend the language because my brain recognizes that what you're really trying to communicate is that it is usur, or that it is konim. Remember that was another machlokas that we had, whether the ikur neder requires hatvasa, as the Rush claims, or that it's enough just to say the word usur, and that would work without the din of yadais, like the Ran claims. Okay. Now, what happened is that for some reason, Shmuel decided, and we don't know what forced him into this, taking this position, but Shmuel decided that the way to read the five cases in the Mishnah, this is after we decided we have to stick in the word yad, obviously, because otherwise, why are we explaining yadais? Okay. Then we got into another tangent about, do we start with the thing that we ended with? Do we start with the thing we started with? Fine. We handled that also. Then we got into the question of whether if we're mechatzer something, are we mechatzer it only in the middle, or would be mechatzer even in the beginning? Fine. We went into that also. Those are essentially tangential. But the meat of the question, of course, is how to read the five cases. Now, they're not the same. Why are they not the same? Because the first three cases are referring to a state of separation, which is a very generalized kind of thing. I don't know what that means. I'm distant from you. I mean, in English, I also wouldn't know I'm distant from you. What do you mean I'm distant? Meaning you're not going to stand next to me? Or what does it mean? Does distant mean emotionally distant? Does it mean I'm not going to talk to you? Does it mean I won't go into business with you? I don't know. These words are very unclear. Now, the last words, however, are not unclear because they are referring specifically to eating from you or tasting your things. So why are they don't seem to be the same illustration. So the last two cases are clearly cases of yad problems. I've defined what my issue is. My issue is to eat your food. But what about eating your food? Now, by the way, could it mean that I will eat your food? Sha'ani ochalach, think about that. Might it not mean everything that I eat from you is marvelous and I want to only eat from you? And is why are we so sure that it's even meant to be us? Well, that, the Ran explains, is because the word she does that. If what you wanted to say is that you want to eat with me, you would have said not she'ani ochalach, because that is what it is that I would eat. That means that you want there to be some chalot on that chefta. Well, that could only be a chalot isur. If you were trying to say that you're making a shvua, so then what would you say? I promise that I will eat by you, right? Or you might be saying something like, well, if I eat by you, then I should be usher in something. Okay, but in any event, it can't mean the promise that I will eat with you. Okay, so that's for sure not an issue. So the difference between the first three, which are very unclear as to their meaning overall, and the second two, which is clear about their meaning overall, but it's just an illustration of yad, is explained by Shmuel like this, that the first three phrases, the murani mimcha, the mufreshani mimcha, the merchukani mimcha, those are so meaningless, this is what we understood, those are so open to interpretations that they don't mean anything. Meaning you do not have the right to take what should we call it? It's worse than inappropriate. It's completely inexact. And as we're going to see, Nedarim, there is an element that appears by Naziris in which exactitude it employs by Nedarim as well. There's a concept of Ishki Yafli Lindoneder. Yafli means that you utilize the nature of language as being able to define things. If you can't define things, then it's not even a problem of yadot. It's simply impossible to make a neder. This is the way we originally understood Shmuel. Now we're going to be forced today to revise that, okay? But so far, in this sugya, what we believe is that Shmuel is saying we have to distinguish between language that doesn't mean anything in particular, that's not even called a yad. And then we have language that is clear, but you don't say openly what you want to say and what you're trying to communicate. Namely, you're not saying konam, or you're not saying usur. That's the question of a yad. Why then does the Mishnah write it in this way, says Shmuel? Because the Mishnah is trying to say like this. If you said the first three cases, then nothing would happen. It wouldn't be a neder. Only in the event that you add the last two cases, then the neder would be chal. So you'll say, okay, but then you could have just said the last two cases. No, that's the whole point, you see. It's true that the last two cases would have been a neder because of yodais, but by saying the first three cases and then saying the last two cases, what I'm essentially saying is, Bamed dvarim amurim. So when do we say mufreshani mimcha, merchukani mimcha, is considered to be an iser? Only in the event that you added shani toim or shani ochel. So what Shmuel is trying to bring out is a new concept of imprecision, which is less than yadai. That's the way we understood Shmuel. We started attacking Shmuel yesterday. What was our attack based on? It was based on two brises. In these two brises, the two separate clauses of the Mishnah, one with the three words, the Mufreshani, the Mufreshani, the Mudrani, and one with the two words, Shani Ochel, Shani Toim, were presented independently. The worst thing is, not only were they presented independently, on each clause it said usur separately. So in other words, if you're telling me mudrani, meruchakani, usur, then you're saying not like Shmuel, because according to Shmuel, this was imprecise language, and it doesn't do a darn thing, right? And the other brisa also had the two things that were put together as clauses, each one saying usur, except in the opposite order. Now, we tried to get out of it originally by claiming that you could read it as a Bamed Dvarim Amurim, the first brisa, so that had it in the order of the Mishnah. And we could read the second one as trying to bring out very clearly that the only time that you would say that Meruchukani, Mudrani, I mean, that She'ini Ochel, that what that is coming to tell me is that even if I would have said before the Mudrani and the Merukhokani, it wouldn't have been enough. And that way, I should not make the mistake of thinking that each one stands together. We threw that out. Why? For the very simple reason that it says Usher twice. If it says Usher twice, there's only to read it as being one interdependent discussion. So therefore, they are two different cases. Now, if they're two different cases, we now have to revise what Shmuel is saying. How do we understand that the Mishnah, that the Braita is talking about two different cases? If it could have put them all together and said one usher at the end, right? So there's got to be a difference between the first part of the list, let's say the Mudrani and Merukhokani, and the second, Shani Ochel, Shani To'in. Therefore, they're both usher, but they're both usher apparently in different ways. So what would be the different ways? So that's what we originally tried to answer. And that is that in the event that you said Shani Ochel Lach, Shani To'im Lach, then it's usher, but it's only usher in one direction. You're saying what I eat from you would be usher. But if you just said, I am distant from you, then it meant to include a complete distancing between the two of you. And you mean to prohibit him from having any hana from you and to prohibit yourself from having hana from him. And that would be why the Braita is separated into two cases, because obviously they can't be exactly the same and use usher as if they're two cases. There's got to be a difference. So first we thought, okay, that's the difference. And that's exactly what Shmuel meant to say in the Braita. We had it all in the Mishnah. We had it all wrong. Shmuel wanted to say that since in the Mishnah, it doesn't say usher, usher. It says just one usher. So it's obviously trying to speak in a way of Bamed Dvarim Amurim. So therefore, the way we thought that Shmuel really meant to say is that what is the Mishnah telling me? Where do I say in our Mishnah that only you are the one that is usher? That's where you added the word Shani Ochelach, Shani Toimlach. But if you hadn't added those words, you both would have been usher on each other. That's what we thought Shmuel was saying, and it was consistent with what we thought Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Chanina was saying. So far, so good? Pretty clear. Okay. So then the Gemara shows that that is simply wrong, and that there's a Beferish Mishnah. I mean, I say Beferish, but I mean, any child reading through that Mishnah would come to the conclusion that that's wrong. And that unless you speak out the fact that I'm usher on you and you are usher on me, that even the Lashon of Mudrani Amach would not have meant that you're both usher. So we threw that out also, because it turns out that we cannot support Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Chanina's opinion the way that we understood it. So what are we going to do now with Shmuel? That was the question that we left off yesterday on Daf Hei Amud Aleph. We've got a real problem of understanding Shmuel, and the Mishnah has got to be understood somehow or other as mixing these cases. And Shmuel says that they're all meant to be one case of matching up one ending, one of two endings with one of three beginnings. So what does he mean? That's where we got up to. All right. So now we're going to try again. And we're going to start with the words Elohachi Itmar, the Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. You know, what we're trying to say is not what we thought before, that Mudrani would have meant that both of them are Aser, but rather there's a difference between Mudar Ani Lecha and Mudrani Heimach, from you. And those are two different languages. So that's going to be an approach that's not going to turn out to be holding water, but let's see if that would work. So maybe what Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina meant was, if you say Mudar Ani Licha, so then they are both usher, one on the other, because what we're talking about is the word lecha really could mean two separate things, because lecha means sometimes, the not just to you, which would mean that you would be also, but it means that which is yours, lecha, to that which is lecha. So since it means both of those things, mudrani lecha, it means I am also to you and I am also from you, meaning of that which is yours. Okay, maybe that's what he was trying to say. But if he says beferish, mudrani hemach, from you, then it obviously means I am usher to be nene from you, but not that you are usher to be nene from me. And that way, the Mishnah later on that says that you have, if you're going to use the lashon of hemach, you have to speak out that I from you and you from me. When we're talking about harei ani lecha cherem alach cherem v'ata alai, whatever. Now that would work out even according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina. Says the Gemara, well, I don't know. Maybe it works for Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina. It certainly doesn't help Shmuel, because our Mishnah does use the word hemach, right? It says budrani hemach. And we said that the Mishnah is, according to Shmuel, only going to ask you if you say the word shani to'em lecha v'shani ochel lecha. And you were trying to say that to make it work with the Braisa, it's then that we say hu da atzer v'chaver mutter. But if you just would have said mudrani himach, you would have been both atzer from each other. So that's against the Mishnah later on. So you're going to have to revise Shmuel. Okay. Now, the way that we revise Shmuel, Rabbi Yisai, is that we realize that Shmuel meant exactly what he said the first time, and that all of this stuff was ridiculous. It was clear that Shmuel was trying to say, I mean, come on, what are you trying to fool? Shmuel was trying to say all along that unless you match up the one of those two endings with the beginning, that it's not going to be usher. That's what he said. Unless they try to say it would have been even more usher. I mean, who really believed that? So I'll tell you what our mistake was. Our mistake was that we ended up with a problem from the Braisa because we believed that Shmuel was creating a new set of speech issues, namely imprecision. That was our mistake, because that clearly we see in the Braisa is not the problem, because the Braisa says that Mudrani Mimcha would be Usher, period, on its own, by repeating Usher twice. So therefore, Shmuel's dream, or what we thought Shmuel's dream was, of creating a less than yad criterion, this is not even a yad, is wrong. That we see clearly from the Mishnah. We have to give up on that. Okay. But what we can recognize, and which the truth is we've kept up our sleeve the whole time because we knew perfectly well that this is an issue, and that is that the issue of yad is divided into two different types of yadayim. And this is how our Gavi is back in action. One of them is called yadayim mochichot. And one of them is called yadayim she'enan mochichot. And it is not an issue of imprecision in the lashon of the neder. It's a question of the clarity of the implications of the yad. That's the issue. And therefore, even though I can pretty well guess what you mean, I'm still left scratching my head a bit. I mean, but am I sure? No, I'm not sure. So that's yadayim she'enan mochichot. When I say something like, mudrani mipcha she'eni ochel lecha, oh, now you know perfectly well, there's only one word missing, oser, right? Or kona. That is yadayim mochichot. So you'll ask me, okay, so what do you gain? All that you've done is you've changed semantics. Before you called it a new set of imprecision, and now you're calling it a yadayim she'ena mochichot. But it boils down to the same issue. It's the problem from the Braita. I'll tell you, I gain tremendously by revising what you think is merely semantics. Because if you think about it, it's clearly not semantics. One is a question of the problem of the nature of neder, and the other is a question of the problem in yad. right? Well, it happens to be that I gain tremendously. Why? Because I am going to show you that there is a machlokas tanoim about the category of yadayim she'enam mochichot versus yadayim mochichot. But there is no Tana that would back Shmuel up by creating a new set of imprecise language points, you see? So therefore, I had no way of answering the Braita before. But now that I've changed it, and I said, well, really, all that Shmuel is saying is that yadayim she'enan mochichot enam yadayim. So now I can't ask on Shmuel, but Shmuel, the Braita says it stands on its own. Shmuel will say, well, come on, man. We all know that there's a shita that says that yadayim she'enan mochichot enam yadayim. And that's how I hold. And there's another shita that holds that yadayim she'enan mochichot or yadayim. And that's how the Braita is going. But our Mishnah is not going like that. And then we have to ask, how do you know our Mishnah is not going like that? Fine, I understand. That's the next thing that we're going to have to explain. But by reframing the entire issue into the question of yadayim, first of all, note that what we've done is we've made the Mishnah much more clear, because the Mishnah that is introducing the concept of yadayim is precisely the place where we would expect that the Tana would deal with, okay, how clear does it have to be in order to be yadayim? So now it's beautiful. It's not introducing this new quality of imprecision. It's talking about what are clear yadayim. And that's what we need to talk about, because after all, I am presenting you here for the very first time. I unfold yadayim. Okay, so now you learned a new concept. And now I'm going to show you, as I introduce the concept, by using these five, which you thought were five examples, I'm going to show you the difference between yadayim mochichot, yadayim she'enam mochichot. So everything works out beautifully. All that we need to tie up is a couple of loose ends, which is, how does Shmuel know that that's what the Mishnah means? Which is a particularly painful question, since it happens to be that the Rabbim, the Chachomim, actually hold that yadayim she'enam mochichot are yadayim. So, I mean, why does Shmuel Paskin not like them? And he Paskins dafka like Rabbi Yehuda? These are the questions that we're going to go through now in this daf. But I think finally that clarifies absolutely what it was that Shmuel was trying to say. It makes the Mishnah very clear, and it opens up the sugya of yadayim for you. So now let's start with the Gemara, see how the Gemara says what I just said. Ela mi kara de Shmuel hachi. Now let's go back, okay? What Shmuel was trying to say is exactly what we said. Namely, taima di yomar shani ochel lecha v'shani to'em lecha. Who, oh, you know, gentlemen, please forgive me. I skipped a piece. Oh, shoot, I skipped a few lines. I forgot we didn't do this yet. Okay. So can you hold that in your minds for a minute? And let me just tell you the part that I skipped. Okay. So the part that
We're with you, Rabbi. We're with you. Okay. Keep going.
Thank you. Okay. So please hold off on this last piece with such a nice introduction. I can't believe I messed it up like that. But anyway, okay, I jumped ahead of myself. First, we're going to try to say that there's another difference between the two cases in the Braita. And that's what Shmuel was trying to say. And he was still trying to give us the shtick that it would be even worse. And what is that? Instead of saying the difference is whether both are us or on each other, or you're only us or on him, that what he was trying to say is, it's only because you said Shani Ochel v'Shani To'im. That's why it's only an Israhila. But if you would only have said the word Mudrani Mimcha, you would have been us or even Bahana'a. Okay, so it's another attempt to make it even worse if you don't add the end. Ask the Gemara, then that's not how Shmuel should have said it. What Shmuel should have said is, Ve'im lo amar shani ochelecha shani yotem to'im lecha otzra filu ba'na'a. That's all he should have said. Not he should have said, well, it's only if. That's not the point. You see, by using the word, Shmuel uses the word, only ad sheyomar, only at the point that he ends with shani ochelach. So neither of the pshatim of Shmuel that we tried to say makes sense with the word ad, right? Because ad means No, it's not going to be usher until. But if you're trying to make it be less usher by saying that, it's pretty ridiculous to say odd. What you need to say is if, not until. So therefore, we're going to throw out all attempts to explain Shmuel as saying things get better and less usher by adding the last piece and go back to the way we understood it at the beginning. All right. So here's where we're go click back into my beautiful introduction. And now we get to the Gemara's description. Ela hachi itma. The only reason that it's usher at all is because he said, Shani ochel lecha, Shani to'em lecha, which is exactly the way we understood it in the first place. That's where Huda usher. But if he just said, Mudrani mimcha, it does not mean in any way that it's usher. Why? Because it could mean anything. It could mean, Mudrani mimcha might mean, I'm not going to talk to you. Lo mishta'ina ba'adach mashu. Mufrashani mimcha. That might mean I don't want to go into business with you. You know, let's lead our separate lives. Yeah, if you say that, does that mean that you want to break up with the person? Not to have anything to do with it. Well, it means that we have separate lives, separate incomes, and we're not going to go into business. That's all. And the idea of mirchukani mimcha means I don't want to stand next to you. Maybe that's all it means. That lokeimna ba'arba amodilach. Where does it say I won't be nenef from your property and so on? Therefore, I need to add the last part in order to make it clear what it is that I'm referring to as us. And now, so far we haven't said anything, right? Because that's exactly what we thought in the beginning, and that was the problem that we had the Braita. And here is the way that we fix it. So are you saying, therefore, says the Gemara, that if that's the case, and the problem is that we don't know what is meant to be usher, then that would mean lema kasov hashmul yadayim she'inan mochichot lo havin yadayim. But the problem is not just the imprecision, and therefore it's not being useful for a netter. That's not the problem. The problem is that we don't know what the iser is. That's the problem. Ah, so then it's a problem in yadayim. So now you're saying that yadayim that are not clear are not considered to be a handle, literally, that's what yadayim meant, are not considered to be a handle that would make it konam, or that would make it usher. Is that what Shmuel is saying? Oh, absolutely, says the Gemara. In Shmuel mukim lalamasis in Kerib Yehuda. Yes, Shmuel holds that our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda's Shita is Yadayim She'enu Mochichot, Lo Havin Yadayim, and therefore you cannot ask anything on him from those Braitot that we asked on yesterday, because those Braitot are going according to the Chachomim, and the Chachomim hold Yadayim She'enu Mochichot, or Yadayim, so what's the problem? You can't ask on Shmuel because he wants to paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. And I'll show you Rabbi Yehuda's Shita, okay? Let's take a look at Masechet Gittin in the Mishnah for a minute, and we will see what the problem is with Yadayim She'inan Mochichot. Okay, so the Mishnah in Gittin says, what is the essential get? Gufo shel get. If I just want to strip it down to its absolute minimum, what needs to be written in that get? All that you need to write is Hare at Muteret Lechol Adam. That's what it has to write. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, that's not enough. There's more that you have to add. You have to add V'dein Da'avi Lechiminoi, that this, meaning this very document that I am handing you, is meant to be from me to you, a sefer tiruchin and an igeret shivukim. It means that this is a booklet, so to speak, it's a sefer kritut. So a sefer of sending you out and a letter of release. That you know, we're not together anymore. I am leaving you, shivuki. Okay, what are those? It turns out that there are two issues here. Issue number one is the question of V'dein. V'dein means that you have to make it clear that the get consists of the document and not of the words. and that it's this written document that is your get. And therefore, if you're not, it might be mashman that you're just giving her the information, but the information does not a get make. So therefore, it says Rabbi Yehuda, it's not clear. It needs to be absolutely clear. So write v'dein. This is your get. Furthermore, it is not clear that you are the one that is throwing her out of your house, because maybe you're a shliach for somebody else. I don't know. So therefore, you have to write lichi minoy. This is a document from me to you, which is going to achieve our separation. Therefore, we see clearly that the Tanakhama holds that that is taken for granted. If I'm handing this to you and I write Areyat Muteret L'chol Adam, it's quite obvious that I'm giving it to you as a get, and that is a Yadayim, even though it's not Mochichot, but it's good enough. And Rabbi Yehuda says, well, you have to make it clearer than that. Okay, so now we see there's a machlokas. At least we're assuming that it's the same machloket that we find in Gittin. And when applying it here, Shmuel would be going according to Rabbi Yehuda, and he would therefore try to explain the Mishnah Aliba to Rabbi Yehuda. And those two brises that we bought, that we were asking on Shmuel from, they were going according to the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama holds that even Yadayim She'ena Mochichot are enough. And that's why the Braita said, even if you say Mudrani Mimcha, Murchukani Mimcha, that's enough. Why? Because it's also Yadayim. A Yadayim of a lower quality, but it's still good enough Yadayim. And Shmuel holds it's not good enough. But why would Shmuel feel compelled to explain the Mishnah according to Rabbi Yehuda? Couldn't he even utilize the sheet of the Rabbanan and not learn that they're talking over here about the last two explaining the first two? Let him just take it easy and just say that it's going to Yadayim She'ena Mochichot. So how exactly do we know that he's going specifically? Where did he get it from that it's only going to work out according to the Rabbi Yehuda? I mean, couldn't he make it work out the way we were trying to make the prices work out according to him? Well, I understand that when he had already made up his mind, we couldn't make the prices work out according to him. But I mean, there was a way to understand those prices. So why are we quite certain that he's not the way that he would understand the Mishnah? Answers the Gemara, because the Mishnah didn't make sense to him. Amar Rava Masnis and Keshite, he didn't see any way to understand the words in the Mishnah. Because if the only issue was the Yadayim She'ena Mochichot versus Yadayim Mochichot, why would it say the word Licha? If all we're trying to do is we're trying to explain that the words Mudrani are meant to be understood in terms of eating, and they're not meant to be understood in other terms, like we wanted to say that maybe it would be both of us are asr on each other, was one of our possible approaches, or that there would be an Isra Hanoah. So fine, if you want to make that clear, just say what I will eat or what I will taste, right? Isn't that enough? Just say, Shani Ochel, Shani To'im. It isn't really necessary. If you're telling me that Yadayim She'enan Mochichot are good enough, and that's the Tanakhama Shita, so then that means that we can actually stick in the words Mimcha Asur. So why do we need the Lecha? That's the equivalent of saying in the get, from me to you. And the Rabbanan said, you don't need to say from me to you. It's clear it's from me to you. So therefore, Shma Mina Be'inan Yadayim Mochichot. It's clear from there that if it's absolutely necessary to write Sha'ani Ochel Lecha. So then that shows that you need Yadayim Mochichot. And in fact, because of that, we end up paskening Lahalacha that you actually do need Yadayim Mochichot. And from here we see that Yadayim She'enan Mochichot are actually not good enough. And that's how it is that we're coming out in the Gemara. So Shema Amina, Be'inan Yadayim Mochichot. And the truth is, it's a machlokas between Rava and Abaye, and as usual, you paskin like Rava. So he holds the same thing that Shmuel says. Itmar, Yadayim She'inan Mochichot, Abaye Omer Havin Yadayim, Rava Omer Lo Havin Yadayim. So classically, the halacha will follow Rava, and over here we'll follow the diuk that Shmuel is making in the Mishnah, and therefore we're coming out with our final psak. Yadayim she'ina mochichot, lo havin yadayim. And now it remains for us to understand, why is that true? Where do we get it from? And in the process of understanding that, we're going to be exploring broader understandings of the nature of yadayim. Because remember, until now we spoke about yadayim as being essentially pattern recognition. But that means that it's part of language itself. Is that true? Might the idea of yadayim be based not only on pattern recognition, but on context recognition? In other words, is a particular context more likely to mean something? Now, remember, if you're talking about artificial intelligence, that's also part of what you need to train artificial intelligence to understand. Words said in different contexts have very different meanings. And because of that, maybe Yadayim Mochichot are more than just pure extensions of language, but they're integration of an entire experience. So this is all what we're about to explore. Oh, my Rava. So Rava said, I got the explanation for this idea from Rabbi Yidi. Rabbi Yidi Asbarali. It says in the Pasuk, Nozir Lahazir Lahashem. Now, remember that that meant that the Yodais of Nazirais, we said that's the mocker of the idea of Yodais. And since it puts it together with Nozir, with standard Nazirais, what it's telling us is that standard Nazirais and Yonos Nazirais have to have the same quality. What is that quality? Well, what it says in the Pasuk is Ish ki yafli, lindor neder. Now, the word of ki yafli is part of the strange nature of language in which definitions emerge from the utilization of words. And therefore, when we talk about pele, it's always in the sense of things that are ineffable in a sense and come out to emerge. So if we talk about love, we can call it pele. If we talk about language, we always refer to it as pele, because the fact is that in groups of sounds and so on, for meaning to emerge is an absolutely incredible, weird phenomenon. And it's difficult to get your brain around it, right? So when it says Pella in terms of the Naziris, it must mean that there's also a concept of absolute clarity in the internal workings of Yodais. So just like Naziris needs to be clear, the Yodais need to be clear in their way. So obviously, you're never going to say that Yodais and Naziris need to be less clear than Naziris itself. That's obvious. But as the Ran explains, the point over here is there's different aspects of Pella. So one Pella is in terms of your desire, the clarity of your desire to be the Nazir. And the other is the Pella in terms of the clarity of the meaning of the utilization of the Yad. That's the point. So in the same way that Naziros is only Behafla'ah, so too is the Yodais. The Yodais themselves have to be Hafla'ah. And therefore, we need to have nothing missing from the clarity of what is being defined. So, wait, are you saying now that Rava and Abaye, I'm really confused. You started off by bringing me a Mishnah in Gittin. You claimed that the Mishnah in Gittin is a machlokas between Rabbanan and Rabbi Yehuda, which is machlokas Tanoim, and that it was based on nothing to do with Naziris, right? It just had to do with how to understand the nature of meaning. Now, all of a sudden, we're back again. Man, oh man, I've been running around in circles. Now you have a machlokas Amoroim. I mean, first of all, why would we have a machlokas Amoroim if we already have a machlokas Tanoim? And now you're telling me that the machlokas Amoraim revolves around the understanding of the nature of language when it comes to Naziris. But what does that have to do with the story in Gittin? Were you wrong about the assumption of Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan in Gittin? So you're trying to tell me now that Abaya and Rava are arguing in the machlokas Rabbi Yehuda Rabbanan kamiflge ditznan, like we just had, gufa shall get. And Reb Yehuda says, no, that's not enough. You need to also write V'dein, and you need also to write L'chi Minoi. Now, these two issues of the V'dein and the L'chi Minoi are two different problems. One is you must have a sefer, and you cannot divorce with words. And the other is that, obviously, it has to be coming from the husband as his desire to get rid of his wife. Those are two different things. And the truth is, there's a bit of confusion here in our sugya, or the sugya in the Gemara in Gittin. Which one is our primary problem? Are we most talking about the V'dein, or are we talking about the L'chi Minoi? But we sort of go back and forth, as the Ron explains. And in the end, each sugya is Megala on what to do with the other sugya. So in any event, Rabbi Yehuda says, nope, that's not good enough. You have to write V'dein, and you have to write L'chi Minoi. Sefer Teruchin, V'get Peturin, V'Igeret Shivukin, fine. So that means what we understood before. I mean, you just told me this a few minutes ago, that the Tanakhama holds that means that Yadayim She'enu Mochichot are good enough. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's got to be absolutely clear. So what you're telling me now is that Abaye is going according to the Tanakhama, and he's saying, same thing, it's a good enough get, it's a good enough neder. And Rava is saying like Rabbi Yehuda, who says it's not a good enough get, it's in a mochichos, and therefore it's not a good enough neder. I never heard of such a thing. And now, well, how are we coming back to the pasuk in the Naziris? What's going on? Omlecha Abaye, actually, things were not as simple as they looked. The truth is that the situation with Gittin is complex, and it involves other issues. And I say that, in fact, Rabbi Yehuda would have agreed with me entirely over here, okay? Because the only reason that Rabbi Yehuda was insistent over there in saying that, well, it's got to be actually totally clear. Yes, of course. But don't you know that there's a special quality to a get? And what is that? A get is called a get sefer kritut. Kritut means cut all ties. That's what kritut means. And because of that, even the classic English idea of no strings attached is from the Gemara. What the Gemara says is in order for something to be kritut, there cannot be strings that still bind the woman to the husband. So let's say he makes a t'nai. Well, this would be a get, but only on condition that you never go visit your parents. That's not a get kritut, because he's running her life. That's not called kritut when you're running somebody's life and you're putting strings attached to it. Okay, so therefore, by the same token, the kritut means absolute clarity, that I don't have any doubts. That's the point. So that means she has to be completely clear about what he's saying. And if there's any indication that there's some doubt as to whether this is kosher or not, then psychologically it's not a get. But that ties into this new concept that only appears by Gittin, that we don't want women tied to husbands in some weird way, which is what nowadays is a disaster with the whole process of Gittin, is the way that civil law has undermined everything that we've done and everything that the Torah has done to put women through hell in order to get a get and then to keep them in court for 20 years. But it's maddening and absolute violation of everything that the whole system is meant to be, al pi Torah. So maybe that's the reason that Rabbi Yehuda said, look, if it isn't clear, and somebody's going to go over and say, well, wait a minute, I mean, maybe he thought he was being megarish you with the words, you know, that wouldn't be, then that's not a good enough get. But what does that have to do with Nedarim? Avol b'alma, what, you're telling me that in terms of language, qua language, that it wouldn't be good enough? Show me where Rabbi Yehuda ever said that, okay? I never heard that. So I maintain, says a buyer, that Rabbi Yehuda would completely agree with me that the only place where we've got a problem of things needing to be absolutely clear is by Gittin, but certainly not by Nedarim, where even Yadayim She'enon Mofichot are going to be good enough. And that's my opinion, says Abaya. And Rava can say just the opposite. Rava can say that the ostensible machlokas that you found from Gittin is not the correct way to understand the Nedarim issue. I say that the only reason the Rabbanan say that it's good enough by Gittin is because that's a special case because of contextual meaning. Masha Inkain over here, there's no contextual meaning. So ad kan lo ka'amri Rabbanan, delo be'inan yadayim mochichot. That's only the case of the get. Because what are you saying? You're saying, well, it doesn't say that it should come from me to you. What do you mean it doesn't say coming from me to you? So who is it coming from? Joe Schmo? What does Joe Schmo have to do with it? Ein adam megarish et eshet chaveiro. I don't understand. Somebody else is writing her a get. And he's a shliach for somebody else. I mean, you got to be mad. So obviously, contextually, he's giving her a piece of paper that says, we are finished. Okay, so that's it. I don't understand why I need to write out all of this nonsense about it's coming from me to you. Of course it's coming from me to you. I just gave it to you. So therefore, there's no doubt over here because ein adam megaresh et eshet chaveiro. And even though it doesn't say beferish, this should be from me to you, it obviously is from me to you. Okay, but ba'alma mishram atlu. Did you ever hear the Rabbanan say that it's good enough to have something where the context doesn't prove it? No. So I say that the Rabbanan, when it comes to Nedarim, would agree with me, says Rava. Yadayim she'ina mochichot are not considered to be yadayim at all. That's what I say. Okay, so now we have a whole new world opening up to us. First, remember, here's how we went. First, we understood that Shmuel was teaching us a concept of clarity of intent in the neder. And that what we need to have is clarity of the meaning of the language. And this is not meaningful language. It's only once you have meaningful language that then the clarity of intent kicks in with yadayim. And he wasn't distinguishing between levels of yadayim. He was distinguishing between meanings of neder, not meanings of iser, the meaning of the neder per se. We had to give up on that because we had no way of explaining the braitot that were clearly saying that that was not the case. So we changed it in the end. We went through a few, you know, weird iterations in between, but we ended up throwing them all out. That Shmuel was trying to say that things are worse if you wouldn't say the last part, either because it would be an Isra no, or because both of them would be Isra. Forget about that. Shmuel meant what he said. And really, it's very straightforward. We were the ones who didn't quite understand. We thought Shmuel was creating a new category of imprecision in language. But what Shmuel was actually talking about was an old standby issue, which is exactly what the Mishnah you would think would come to tell us. And that is, how clear is the intent of the Iser, which is the Yad? Yad is the word Oser. The Yad is the word Konam. And that's the question. What exactly is his intent in making an Iser over here? I mean, if I don't know what that Iser is, I don't know, what are you talking about? You're talking about not standing next to me? Are you talking about not going to the movies with me? Are you talking about not making business deals with me? I mean, so what is the Iser supposed to mean? Therefore, if I can't tell you that the Yad itself is Osering something, then it's a Yadayim She'en and Mochichot. Now you say, okay, but I mean, it's most likely it's not good enough. And why would most likely not be good enough? Because we learn it out from the Pasuk of Ki Yafli, and that Ki Yafli applies not only to the intent of the Neder, but it applies to the intention of the Yad, the precision of what the Iser is. Okay, so now, once that's true, I'm not concerned about the fact that there's a braita that proves Shmuel wrong. Absolutely. It does prove Shmuel wrong. But so what? If it's a machlokes tanoim, then I can learn one braita like one tana and one braita like the other tana. Now, when it comes to the broader question, it turns out we can't be absolutely certain that that is a machlokes tanoim, the way that Shmuel seems to be understanding it. Because it turns out that Abaye v'Rava, they want to claim that both of those Tanoim could end up agreeing when it comes to Nedarim, either that we need Yadayim Mochichot or that we don't need Yadayim Mochichot. Bottom line is, that gives us multiple interpretations of the Braita. Shmuel insists that this is the interpretation of the Mishnah. Rava agrees with him. Because in the end, Shmuel is being medayik something we didn't even notice in the Mishnah, which is the word licha. We didn't think that that was so critical. But obviously, if it weren't critical, the Mishnah wouldn't have mentioned it. And therefore, Shmuel understands that the Mishnah is telling us yadayim sheinam molchichot lo havin yadayim, which is what Rava holds mitzad hasvara. And we understand that the case in Gittin is different, because in the case of Gittin, it's insane to think this guy happens to be her husband, but he's really giving her a get because Joe Schmo down the street wants to give her a get. What? So therefore, we added now a new idea, which is contextual meaning to the pattern of meaning. And now we come out with a different idea when it comes to Gittin than when it comes to Nedarim. And we ended up with a clear-cut psak halacha. The halacha is like Rava, and this can be found in your local Shulchan Aruch. So coming down to today from the Mishnah, we've gone through a lot of messy iterations, which Akiva is certainly writing down in his messy notes. And we now have a clear-cut psak. We're not making pretend that we understand all of the nature of contextual meanings, which we're going to be going through a lot of in the Gemara, but at least we've got ourselves pretty much a clear understanding of the basic concepts here. Kinuyin, we introduced two new concepts today. The difference between Yadayim She'ena Mochichot and Yadayim Mochichot, and we also introduced the concept of Hafla'a. And the question of whether Hafla'a is applicable exactly to Yadayim as it is to the meaning of the desire to make a neder at all. And that turned out to be something that is learned out from the pasuk itself, the comparison of nazir to lahazir. So not only do we have a hekesh of neder to nazir, but we have a hekesh of yadayim to naziras, yadayim of naziras to naziras, which broadens our understanding of the meaning of kiyafli.